And joining me now in the Janine Baysinger studio is Rob Lonsinger. He is with the SDSU Department of Natural Resources Management, and you've developed a new non-invasive genetic sampling technique.
And I shouldn't take credit for it. I didn't develop it myself.
But you're bringing it to South Dakota.
Yeah, so for the last, it's been around for a while, but has seen relatively little use among managers to manage it and monitor wildlife populations.
Okay, and tell me what this technique is.
So the technique, it's commonly called non-invasive genetic sampling, and it essentially involves the collection of material. I'll say that to start with. This collection of material that's been left behind in the environment by animals.
Okay.
So that material might be scat, so mm-hmm. droppings. It might be hair, eggshells, feathers. It can even be collecting water samples and running those through filters and collecting DNA from amphibians and fish that occupy a lake or a stream.
Okay, so let's start with scat. Let's start with coyote scat. And you're going to be able to determine what?
So I'm glad we're starting there. I've spent a lot of years studying coyote scat. So with coyote scat, you know, we can go out, we can collect this scat. From that, we can get DNA. We can confirm, first of all, that it's a coyote scat, that we're not accidentally collecting dog scat or fox or something else. And then we can actually take that, identify the individual that deposited it, and we can use that to estimate population size, population abundance or density. We can estimate population survival, so whether animals are, you know, surviving at a level that we would expect them to based on our population management goals. And we can also look at diet. So we can say, well, you know, based on the DNA in the scat, what are they consuming? Does it align with what we believe that they're consuming, for example? And there's a lot of other things as well, but those are sort of some of the big picture items that we often are looking at.
And how do you determine population size from scat?
So yeah, great question. The population size, so essentially we're using the same models that are classically used in wildlife management. So essentially, you know, if you go out and you want to estimate population size for coyotes, a general approach would be you go out and you capture some and you mark them. And then you go back later and you capture some more individuals and you look at how many of the new individuals you captured or the second capture event, how many of those were marked or unmarked. And then you can use that ratio to estimate a population size. We're doing the exact same thing. We're just doing it with genetics. So now when instead of capturing an animal, we go out, we collect a scat, we look at the genetic identification of the individual, and that's our mark. So now we go back and we sample
collect
again.
Collect more scat. I see.
And we see how many of those individuals we already identified based on their genetics and how many we didn't. And then we can apply that in the same approach.
Okay. A coyote as a predator, there's a lot of talk right now about the pheasant population and improving pheasant management and habitat. And the coyote as the predator, is it the number one predator of a pheasant?
Great question. So, yeah, there is a lot of talk among the community here and elsewhere related to pheasant populations and their trends and how predators might play a role in that. And the relative, perhaps, influence of predators and habitat. And so, we could use non-invasive genetic sampling as a way to monitor coyote populations in areas where we believe pheasant populations are declining. That would give us some information as to what the role of coyotes might be in that. There's some evidence from other work that coyotes might actually benefit pheasants, which is contradictory to mm-hmm. a lot of popular belief. Because coyotes, they suppress smaller carnivores, and these smaller carnivores are often really important, or I should say really substantial predators of nests. Of
the egg
nests.
Eaters,
so
right.
The eggs, they eat the chicks, and they also may be more prevalent in taking the adults as well. Mm. And so when coyotes are present, we know that coyotes suppress some of these nest predators, so raccoons and foxes and skunks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is some
What's
evidence.
The balance?
There is a balance that needs to be struck. I think one of the important things that needs to be determined up front is what is the actual role of coyotes and their impact on pheasants. Currently, a lot of the information we have is on how pheasants influence some other predators and how pheasant populations appear to be declining, but we actually haven't made an explicit link between what's going on with coyotes, those predators, and pheasants. There has been some work related to ducks, which has shown this pattern that we believe to be true in pheasants as well, where coyotes would potentially benefit pheasants. But it hasn't been done explicitly for pheasants.
And do you see this happening? Do you see this research as being needed in South Dakota right now?
I certainly think it's needed. I hope it happens. So whether it happens or not is not entirely up to me. But, you know, one of the reasons non-invasive genetic sampling sort of comes into play with this is because coyotes are a really difficult critter to get your hands around the population size, right? So we go out and if we try to trap coyotes, it's very time consuming. It's very expensive. They're pretty elusive. They're persecuted pretty heavily, so they learn pretty quickly to avoid humans and traps and things like that. And so it can be hard to capture enough animals using traditional approaches to actually get a reliable population estimate. With non-invasive genetic sampling, one of the things I've done with coyotes is use this approach to get reliable estimates of population abundance because, well, you know, it's a lot easier to find their scat than it is to capture an animal. And so just to give you an example, a study we had done previously, they spent years trying to estimate population size for coyotes. Were never able to generate enough recaptures or captures and recaptures of live coyotes in order to do that. And so they spent a lot of money trying to estimate abundance and were unsuccessful. And so we were able to use non-invasive genetic sampling to produce reliable estimates for coyotes within a one-year period. So we essentially were able to go in, collect scats, and produce a reliable estimate.
So are you thinking about working with Game Fish and Parks and just having, you know, the workers in the field pick up the scat and send it to you? Or what type of study can be done?
Yeah, so that is a potential starting point. I would really, I mean, a lot of the work I do is intended to work with managers and to be applied. My background is in management, so that's my goal. So, you know, it could start with collection by game managers, whether that's biologists, their crew, predator control folks, as well as some of these projects employ the public as well. So citizen scientists to go out and conduct certain surveys. So I've been actually out here in the South Dakota winter, my first winter in South Dakota, and realizing the potential promise here is really high, especially for winter sampling, because the cold conditions here would preserve the DNA. So essentially would reduce our sort of effort required to get enough samples. And so there's potential there to have, you know, citizen scientists who might be involved in going out and surveying certain routes and collecting samples. So there's a whole bunch of different ways we could do this that could help us address some of these questions.
And you can do this non-invasive genetic sampling with water as well?
Yeah, so it's commonly called something different. It's commonly called environmental DNA, but essentially it's the same process. It's collecting DNA that's been left behind. And this process for environmental DNA, essentially you collect a water sample, you run it through a filter that filters out DNA sources, and then you essentially run the genetics just like you would with a scat or a hair, and you can identify what species occupy that water body. And so this has been used really heavily recently for threatened or endangered species. For example, the Idaho giant salamander, which is an endemic to high elevation mountain streams, but it's pretty rare. You can sample a stream and figure out, well, is this giant salamander present in the stream somewhere? It's also been used for invasive species. So carp in the Great Lakes system, for identifying if carp is in a system, you can go out and collect some water samples, run the genetics, and determine if carp is there. One of the challenges right now with eDNA, so this aquatic version of non-invasive genetic sampling, is that it's not quite to the point yet where we can identify population size. So we're not very good yet at, our techniques aren't developed well enough yet in order to identify individuals. So we can identify species through these environmental DNA samples, but not individuals. And part of the limitation there is that because it's aquatic, moisture breaks down DNA.
Sure.
So the DNA fragments are generally smaller.
Okay. And so you're new to SDSU, yes?
I am, yes.
And so are you setting up a lab for this research? Are you training managers out in the wildlife biologists out in the field on how to do their own studies? What do you, paint me that picture.
Okay, so yeah, so we So I started in August, and I do have some space dedicated to start a conservation genetics lab here at South Dakota State. And so in that capacity, it will be used in, first of all, to train graduate students. And those graduate student projects would most certainly be directly related to applied management here in South Dakota. So perhaps it would be looking at coyote density in relation to pheasant survival or pheasant populations. Also to train undergraduates. So in one of my previous positions, I trained undergraduates in non-invasive genetic sampling techniques, and they've produced some pretty nice science and had some publications as undergrads, so that was really nice. And then there's a huge amount of potential to work with managers, to train managers, but also just to process samples for managers, right? So if managers have particular projects that they want to carry on, we could potentially be a source where they send those samples, we process them, get them the results back.
Okay. Well, I think that it is a much needed research that needs to happen here.
Thank you.
So welcome to South Dakota and our winters here. You came from Ohio? No.
Oh, no. I'm originally from Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania,
but I've been out in New Mexico and Idaho for many years. So.
Okay. So welcome to winter.
Thanks.
A real winter. And the population and getting our handle on. I know that our new governor, Kristi Noem, is really talking about pheasant habitat and pheasant hunting and preservation and even a bounty system. So there's lots of conservation conversations going on around as well. So the research really matters.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. So thank you and welcome. And I look forward to following your research and keeping you, have you come back again and keep us updated.
Thank you, Kara. Appreciate being here.